Well, exactly 3 months ago, legalized recreational marijuana hit the shelves. Questions about the addictive nature of the product still remain. Labels on cannabis approved by Health Canada and bought at the local Tweed store have varied between a warning that say 1 in 2 people will become addicted, all the way to 1 in 11 will become addicted. Wayne Bishop is the Addictions Prevention Consultant with Eastern Health. He joins me live in studio. Good to see you, Wayne.
Good morning.
What does the science, your own experience, say about the risk of addiction to recreational marijuana?
All right. So, I mean, this is one of these questions that we get asked quite a bit, and there's certainly, some level of controversy maybe around the addiction's potential, but the science is fairly clear on it. But there are a number of factors, just like any other substance. You know, there are a number of people who will become addicted or somewhere on that continuum of a substance use disorder, and there are people who won't be. So there's lots of different factors, but some of the science really tells us that depending on those characteristics, we can see anywhere from 1 to 9% of people who are using on a more frequent level or frequent basis become potentially addicted or somewhere on that substance use disorder continuum.
So what are some of the factors? You know, some people have what they call an addictive personality. So are we talking about the strength of the marijuana you smoke, the frequency? What are those factors?
Absolutely. So strength, THC level, certainly a big one. Age of onset is probably one of the bigger ones. So we know that, you know, the stat is that we use a lot is 1 in 9. And that's 1 in 9 of individuals who are potentially using on a daily, weekly basis. But when we think about youth under the age of 18, that stat actually goes up to 1 in 6. So age of onset of use is a big piece, and it's a big piece with all substances in general. So we know frequency of use, potency of use, so higher THC levels, individuals that may have other mental health related issues or another addiction related issue. Genetics sometimes plays a role, and other health conditions. The other, I guess, piece to this would be individuals who are using tobacco as well are at a higher risk for developing an addiction to cannabis.
What constitutes an addiction here? Because I know people that can smoke daily, and right. then maybe in the past, of course, when you travel, say, down to Florida for a couple of weeks on holidays, right. and no problem to stop because you just didn't bring it or you didn't buy it.
Right.
So what constitutes actually being addicted?
Absolutely. So, you know, and again, it's just like many other substances. You know, some people are going to have addictions related issues, and some people aren't. It depends on, again, some of those factors I mentioned earlier. But we do define an addiction from a cannabis perspective as a cannabis use disorder, and there's certainly criteria within that, and there's some severity and difference in severity of what someone could be addicted within a cannabis use disorder. But, you know, typical things, like we oftentimes kind of pare it down to think about the 4 C's of addiction, right? So one is cravings, having cravings to use a substance. Loss of control over the frequency or the amount of use. Compulsion to use, and using despite knowing the consequences. And that's sometimes a bigger one for some individuals when we think about how we identify addiction, is using despite knowing what some of those consequences are going to be of the use of that.
I'm not going to ask you to speak on behalf of Health Canada or the producers of the cannabis, but when you see labels that say 1 in 2 and then another label says 1 in 11,
right.
is this misunderstanding the product, misunderstanding the science? Is it just misinformation that's bleeding into people's minds?
Yeah, I think it adds to it. I mean, I can't comment on every, you know, piece of packaging, but what I can say is that I think over the years, I mean, we've, you know, and I've said this in other interviews, I think we've done a great job in confusing society. You know, we have talked a lot about cannabis over the years. And there's been a level of misinformation out there. Different research products, different people talking about cannabis, different sources of information. I think it's all led to some, I guess, different opinions, some different ideas, and different information that people have, for sure.
Let's not listen to politicians about it, because they're playing a game that is not necessarily dealing with the facts of the matter and the science. Let's talk about young people and marijuana.
Yeah.
It was one of the controversial issues here. The provinces were left up to their own devices to decide what age you could buy it.
Yeah.
But then we hear the medical community chime in about the risks for a developing brain all the way to the age of 25. Yet
right.
we've allowed people at the age of 19 to legally purchase it. What should people know?
Right. So, you know, there's a piece there. Obviously, we may have wanted to move towards that age of 21, but let's be realistic. Youth are using cannabis, whether it's legalized or not. And in Canada, we know that as a country, our youth are using more cannabis, you know, per capita than any other country in the world. So it's always been, well, not it's always been there, but it's certainly been an increased use by youth. So the age of 19, sets a precedent for, you know, purchasing the product. But there are certain risk factors for youth. I mean, the brain development piece is a huge piece. So we know that the youth brain doesn't, you know, fully mature until generally the age of 25. So with certain levels of THC can have significant impacts on a person's, you know, growth and development and brain maturity. We also know that, as I mentioned earlier, that statistic. So, you know, the 1 in 9 for adult populations for developing an addiction, when we recognize that youth are using below the age of 19, it increases the potential for addiction to cannabis significantly. Again, depends on potency, depends on, you know, frequency use and all those variables. But, you know, the brain developing piece is a huge, huge concern, as well as the impaired driving piece for youth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we focus a lot on the maturing brain, the brain development piece as it relates to cannabis use within youth. But the impaired driving piece is a significant factor as well. And we know the statistics around that are certainly somewhat alarming.
And it's hard to wrap your mind around it. We have some benchmarks in our own mind about one beer, one glass of wine, and the ability to not blow over opposed to zero tolerance. X number of nanograms. I don't even think the most veteran smokers know how that translates.
No, just like alcohol, the piece around that is, you're right. You know, a lot of people, there's no one equation. There are so many variables to how much someone can consume in terms of cannabis or alcohol. So many different variables that would put that person over the limit, for example. So there's a lot of education around that. The positive thing from a youth perspective is the limit is zero. So we can't get any more clear than that. Zero is zero, means no use. And I think that's one of the messages that we really have to get out there with youth specifically around the impaired driving piece, is that, you know, zero, zero. There is no use allowed before driving a vehicle.
A last one on the addictive properties of recreational cannabis. Is there any difference between sativa and indica insofar as the ability or the potential for addiction?
Yeah, there are lots of differences. I mean, there's so many differences in the product and different forms of product and the different strains in the product. And that's why, you know, there's no one equation to how one person is going to become addicted versus another person. There's so many different variables. You know, there are different strains. And then, of course, we're seeing some illicit substances like K2 and spice that are synthetic cannabinoids that are, you know, certainly a different product altogether than the legalized marketed cannabis products.
And that's one thing that is a benefit to the smoking public or the people who are consuming, is that it's now regulated and won't be worried about what might be caught into that cannabis. Yeah. Back in my youth, the I guess it's probably more urban myth than anything else, is that it was PCP, angel dust, and whatnot in the cannabis. Wayne, I really appreciate you making time for us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me in.
That's Wayne Bishop, addictions prevention consultant with Eastern Health. It's